BBC News with Sue Montgomery. The president of the Philippines has promised countermeasures against China in contested waters of the South China Sea. This would be an escalation of their dispute, as Michael Bristow reports.
Ferdinand Marcos Jr. said there have been constant attacks from Chinese vessels in disputed waters. He said the Philippines didn't want conflict, but wouldn't be cowed into silence. So he's authorised a package of countermeasures against China, although he didn't say what they were. Mr. Marcos suggested the Philippines' ally, the United States, would help. There have been a number of confrontations between China and the Philippines in the South China Sea. This dispute now has the potential to become even more dangerous.
In a further sign of improving relations with Australia, China is to remove tariffs on Australian wine. In return, Australia will drop its case against China at the World Trade Organization. Here's Laura Bicker.
China imposed tariffs of up to 200% on Australian wine in 2020, after the then Australian Prime Minister called for an objective, independent assessment of how the COVID-19 pandemic began. It cost suppliers an estimated $1.2 billion and left them with the equivalent of 859 Olympic swimming pools of wine in storage. In November, the new Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, became the first Australian Premier to visit Beijing since 2016. He said then that it was in the interests of both countries to stabilise the relationship.
Israeli military action has intensified around three hospitals in Gaza. In Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City, Palestinian doctors say patients urgently need to be moved away. Yolande Nell is in Jerusalem.
As its offensive at Gaza City's biggest hospital, Al-Shifa, continues for an 11th day, the Israeli military says it's now eliminated approximately 200 terrorists in the area. It says it's taking steps to prevent harm to civilians, but a spokesman for the Palestinian Civil Defense said innocent people had been killed and that there were women and children trapped by the ongoing fighting. In the southern city of Khan Yunis, the Israeli army says it's killed dozens of Hamas fighters near Al-Amal Hospital, which has now been evacuated. And with Israeli ground forces also close to Nasser Hospital, the Palestinian Red Crescent has raised concerns about thousands of people it says are stuck there.
The National Assembly in France has voted overwhelmingly in favour of a bill which would penalise workplace discrimination based on an employee's hairstyle, colour, length or texture. It will bar employers from requiring hair to be straightened and for afros, dreadlocks and braids to be covered. It also protects blondes and redheads. BBC News.
You wake up to the 8 o'clock buzz to get the week started.
Now, we need the help of a good volunteer to run our on-air operations each Monday.
Sure, that means waking up a little earlier.
To get to the station around 7:30.
But that's why WORT has coffee.
So that you can start your week off right.
WORT is recruiting a volunteer to run the soundboard each week on Monday mornings from 7:30 to 9 a.m.
You'd run all on-air operations for our morning program, The 8 O'Clock Buzz with Brian Standing.
No experience is necessary, but a familiarity with computers and a strong sense of punctuality and reliability are preferred.
For details, call 608-256-2001 and ask to speak with Shali Pittman.
Or head online to wortfm.org/volunteer to fill out our volunteer application.
Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
Hey there, this is DJ Slimzy, and I'll be hosting another episode of my show, Sonic Signatures, for the Access Hour on Monday, April 1st at 7 p.m. I'll be mixing this all-vinyl DJ set live from the studios here at WORT, so if you haven't seen me around town, you finally got a chance to hear what everybody's been talking about. Expect prog rock, ambient, post-punk, and jazz fusion, maybe even a little house and disco. Who knows? Wherever the night ends up taking us, rest assured I'll bring you some rare and obscure gems, deep cuts, and fan favorites, all for your listening and grooving pleasure, of course. Support your new favorite DJ by tuning into Sonic Signatures with me, DJ Slimzy, on Monday, April 1st from 7 to 8 p.m. on the Access Hour, only on WORT 89.9 FM Madison, listener-sponsored community radio.
Support for this program is provided by WORT's listener sponsors and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 2304. Local 2304 is a small local union with a big agenda, bringing power to the people by representing the workers who provide safe and reliable gas and electric service at MG&E. The professional union reps at Madison Teachers Incorporated, the field organizers and canvassers at For Our Future, and the staff collective right here at WORT. More information about the union is available on their website at ibew2304.com.
Good morning, it's 8:07 and you are tuned into WORT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin, your listener-sponsored community radio station. My name is Tony Castaneda and it's time for the Thursday, March 28th, 2024 edition of the 8 o'clock Buzz. I'm joined by my guy, Eli. Good morning, Eli. How you doing?
Good morning, Tony. Dude, where did March go, man? Feels like this month flew by. Dude.
It sure did, man. You know, you're old now. You're like, you're 30.
Yeah.
So, like, the days just go by, man.
They keep going quicker and quicker, and then...
Think of how much time you got left on this earth, man. Like, March just went like that.
Yeah. Well, shoot, I was thinking about that. We probably just blew past my my anniversary of producing this show. Probably 2 or 3 years. Getting close.
Well, when is it?
It's February something, because I remember we were talking... We always talked about the Super Bowl. Was, like, very early on when I started working.
Wow.
It's either two or three.
It's two
either
years
two
already?
Or three. It might be three.
I think it's 2 years.
I think it's two. Two probably makes sense. I think it's two because yeah. I started it pretty similar to some other comedy stuff. But
yeah, that's how you can tell.
That's all my. That's the only way I track my metrics on my life. I heard you you went to a pretty fun concert last night.
Yeah, I did, man. La Nome. It was most excellent. It was packed, and I was glad to see that. It was. First show, but more importantly, you know, last week you forgot to get paid.
Oh, I said that's my own fault for not picking up my paycheck.
Yeah. I know you didn't get your banana.
Did you
I got
eat
you a banana? Here's this banana.
Did you eat it for
it's
me?
A 70
or did you save
cent
it for
banana
a week?
From yeah. the co-op, dude.
70 cents. That's a good deal. I'm glad. I guess I'm glad you didn't save. I'm glad you didn't save the one from last week again for this
well,
week.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that would be holding.
Here's
your
up. Zucchini bread. So, I didn't save that either.
Good.
And here's your newspaper.
I'll tell you, man. The zucchini bread it lasts. A couple of times I don't eat it and I go eat it like 3 days later. It's pretty good.
It's good like 3 weeks later.
Yeah, I know, man.
Actually.
And they I don't know what they put into it, but I guess I do know exactly what I say. I don't know what they put into it as I'm reading the ingredients list. So. But something keeps it good.
Hey, you want to be a you want to run the board for the Monday Buzz? I'm looking for somebody.
You know, I heard that ad. Unfortunately, I'm not sure I'm punctual enough for it. I think
I know what the heck. Got to get her at 7:30.
That's what I like
what,
about.
What are
this.
They crazy?
That's what I like about producing for you, Tony. You can show up late,
or not show up,
and you still pay me.
That's right. You get paid no matter what. Yeah, I don't know what Brian pays his guys
yeah.
over there.
I guess I should ask if I maybe can get like an upgrade to, I don't even know what the upgrade would be, a donut?
Yeah. Check it out, man. Yeah. They're hard up as usual on their Monday Buzz show. It's hard. Mondays yeah. are hard.
Well, if you're interested, check it out. We have a lot of fun here on this show. I'm sure that shows.
And it's real simple. Even a monkey could learn how to run this board because I've been doing it. Almost my whole life.
I don't know.
Much to Shally's chagrin, she wants me to have an actual engineer.
Yeah.
Tony, why bother, man?
Yeah, I know. Won't even let me touch the board. You got a show today, Tony?
I'll have to put a card out there saying I need an engineer. Forget that. I need an engineer. You got to get here by 7:59 a.m.
as you beat Tony in the door.
You're right.
You're all right.
We do have a show today, everyone. Thank you very much for tuning in. First of all, people are wondering what to do as far as this primary election season, which is coming up on Tuesdays. You're supposed to vote in many states. There's been a protest vote for many people who are protesting the Biden administration's, involvement in what's going on in Gaza. A lot of places they're voting uncommitted. Here in Wisconsin, people are being asked to vote uninstructed. And we'll be speaking with Dalia Saba from the Listen to Wisconsin campaign about what the vote uninstructed campaign is all about and how you can do it. So we'll be speaking with her at the top of the show. And then we're going to be speaking with Vernal Coleman. He's a reporter for ProPublica's Midwest newsroom. And we'll talk about a recent article he wrote regarding a historic lawsuit in a 25-year campaign to overturn Gary, Indiana's gun regulations that attempted to hold gun manufacturers and retailers responsible for straw purchases of firearms. Well, so we got that. What else you got, man?
The Endurance Improv Festival we talked about a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
Went really well this weekend, last past weekend.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, we had sold out shows celebrating 20 years at Atlas Improv. So thanks to everybody who came out, and we look forward to seeing you at shows in the future.
Right on. Good job.
Awesome.
All right. In a minute, we're going to get to Dalia Saba.
Before we get to it, the views and opinions expressed on the Thursday 8 o'clock buzz do not necessarily represent the opinions of the Warp paid staff, its board of directors, or our millions of volunteers. The Thursday 8 o'clock buzz is for entertainment purposes only.
So there. All right, say 13. It's 8:15. You are tuned into WORT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin. Joining me on the line, I'm very pleased to have Dalia Saba. She's with the Listen to Wisconsin campaign. And as I mentioned a little bit earlier, many people who have been taking part in their primary elections throughout the country have been showing their protest vote, I guess, if you will, in the Democratic primaries by voting uncommitted as a protest for the U.S. government's involvement in actions and what some think is actual involvement, heavy involvement, and in the carnage and the genocide, as many are calling it, in the Gaza Strip. Joining me on the phone is Dalia Saba. Dalia, good morning, and I apologize for having something in my throat. Good morning.
Good morning. How's it going?
Well, it could be better, but hopefully you can talk for a while I clear my throat. But can we talk about the Listen to Wisconsin campaign to tell everybody to vote uninstructed, if you will? I was a little confused when I heard that term. I said, well, aren't we supposed to vote uncommitted? Why are you asking people to vote uninstructed?
Yeah, so as you're referencing, there was an uncommitted campaign that happened about a month ago in Michigan to protest our government's policies, and specifically our president's policies with respect to Gaza, funding what the International Court of Justice has called a plausible genocide. So in Michigan, over 100,000 people voted uncommitted. In Wisconsin, we have a similar ballot option in our primaries. The only difference is this ballot option is called uninstructed, and it's basically a way of saying that when you vote in the primary, you are not directing your delegates to vote for any specific candidate. So we're voting, basically this movement in Wisconsin, we're voting uninstructed in the Democratic primary to send a message to our elected officials that we demand an immediate permanent ceasefire, an end to military aid that's being used to fund this genocide, and reinstating funds to UNRWA, the Palestinian aid organization, and finally an end to the siege on Gaza.
And there is the possibility that the uninstructed, actually, that there will be delegates that will have to vote uninstructed if they get enough votes. Do we know how many votes that would be?
So we don't know exactly. I'm not sure exactly. Sorry, I think someone knows what the threshold is. Our goal for the campaign is to get 20,000 votes, and that's because that was the margin in the 2020 election in Wisconsin between Biden and Trump. So the goal is to show that this movement is a movement that represents a real important portion of Wisconsin voters who care deeply about this.
Now, you mentioned in Michigan, over 100,000 people voted uncommitted. In my understanding, in Minnesota, that it was close to 50,000 people that voted uncommitted. Are we getting, is this a nationwide movement, and how widespread is it?
Yeah, so this is a nationwide movement. I think, you know, first we've seen protests across the country that our elected administration or elected officials' policies have been deeply unpopular among large swaths of our citizens. But yeah, the reason that this is popping up in select states is that only some states actually have the uninstructed option or something similar, like uncommitted, on their primary ballot. So the reason that you see this popping up in not every single state, but in a select number of states, is based on these like different state laws. But as you mentioned, like, this is not just Michigan and Wisconsin. Like, we had Minnesota, we had Massachusetts, we had Hawaii, we had all of these different states since Michigan that have turned out large numbers of people, like 10 to 15% of people voting some version of uninstructed in the Democratic primary.
Mm-hmm. Now, is uninstructed actually going to be one of the choices, or do people have to write it in when they're voting for a presidential candidate?
So, great question. It is actually one of the options on the ballot. So, yeah, that's why we're trying to build momentum around this, is because, you know, sometimes with write-ins, they don't actually count them. For this, they count every single uninstructed vote. You just have to do this, you just have to select the Democratic ballot so that you're voting in the Democratic primary, and then select the uninstructed delegation option.
Wow. Real quick, Tony, yes. You were asking previously about how many needs for to get to a delegate, and it's 15% of the vote in any given district or statewide. So if it's 15% of
In one district,
those district votes go to uninstructed, and if it's also 15% of the statewide election.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it could have a big effect if people could see that. People are dissatisfied, if you will, if that's a calm way of putting it, with the Biden administration's approach to what's going on in the Gaza. Now, we've seen, of course, President Biden and Vice President Harris have been, you know, making the rounds around the country in holding rallies. And at almost every rally, there have been protesters, people asking for a ceasefire at all of these. It kind of catches the Biden administration off guard. Do you think that the Biden administration is starting to hear that there are many people in this country who are dissatisfied with the United States' approach to what's going on in Gaza and their relationship with the Palestinian people and the Israeli government? Dahlia.
I think they have heard. I think you hear them, you know, bracing for protesters, planning for protesters. You also hear them changing their rhetoric. However, we have yet to see meaningful change in action. The recent spending bill that was passed includes yet more funding for Israel. It also prohibits funding for UNRWA until, I believe, 2025, which is cutting off aid further to the Palestinians, particularly those in Gaza who need it most right now. So I think they hear this, but why we need to vote uninstructed is that they think they can brush this outrage off. They think that it's not an issue for them and that voters will forget about it. So the point of this campaign is to show that this is something we care deeply about and to send that message strongly that this isn't something they can brush under the rug. It's also not something that, like, only matters to the, you know, the, like, blue states where they barely campaign at all. Mm-hmm. This is something that matters to Wisconsin voters, and we need to make our voices heard and show that we demand a change in policy.
Right. Now, Dahlia, I know this gets a little personal here, but you actually have family and a friend's connection in Gaza and in Palestine. Can you talk a little bit about that? And just kind of what are you hearing from family and other and friends in Palestine, in Gaza?
Yeah. So the situation is really bad right now. It's frankly only getting worse. Basically, you know, over a million people are catastrophically hungry. My own family members are currently sheltering in a church in Gaza City. They have some access to food, but limited access to food. You know, of the pictures we've been able to see of them, you know, they've lost significant weight. They're lucky that they're able to get some food when many in northern Gaza are not. You know, at least one of the my father's cousins has had his home destroyed. Over 80% of the buildings in Gaza have been damaged. So, this is not a, like, I'm telling anecdotal stories of my own family's experience, mm-hmm. but the scale of this devastation is enormous, and it's really only getting worse and worse because fewer and fewer aid is being let in. People have not had access to aid and, you know, or food in so long, and bombs keep dropping from our tax dollars. So I think there's sometimes a conflation in the way that the media cycle works between a lack of information being let out and the situation getting better, particularly when we think about the hospitals that were counting the dead. Many of those hospitals have had to shut down their infrastructure for counting the dead entirely, which kind of creates an illusion that, like, oh, the rate of destruction has slowed down. But that's not the case at all.
Right. Now, we've seen many Western countries, including the United States, have appeared to be providing some sort of aid, whether it's food. I know the United Kingdom went and set up some field hospitals in areas of the Gaza Strip. What of those efforts and what of the U.S.'s efforts? You know, on one hand, we're doing food drops, and on the other hand, we're doing bomb drops. What the United States is doing in terms of providing aid to people in the Gaza Strip?
Yeah, So I think I'll speak to the U.S. because I don't know much about what the other Western, the details of what other Western countries are doing. But as you alluded to, first, it's incredibly, it's like incredibly badly intentioned to be sending bombs at the same time that you're sending food. Clearly, if you cared about the people of Gaza, you would stop sending the bombs in the first place. To talk about the aid efforts more directly, though, because, you know, there is an issue of, people are being starved to death and they need food. The best and most effective way to get food to these people is through UNRWA, the UN agency that provides aid to Palestinians and has done so for decades. They are the ones with the connections. They are the ones with the on-the-ground support. And instead, the U.S. has completely defunded UNRWA. They have provided airdrops, which are only on a scale of tens of thousands of meals for over 2 million people. Those airdrops have also killed people because they have landed on people when the parachutes don't work correctly. They have dropped into the ocean where people have drowned trying to get to the aid. So the airdrops are humiliating and honestly show like a lack of respect for the starvation that Palestinians are facing. The other effort that the U.S. has done or has started doing is building a pier off the coast of Gaza.
Right.
I think there are two concerns with this. The first one is even if you can get ships to the coast of Gaza, there's no way for them to distribute the aid. The only organization, again, that can distribute the aid, that would be able to distribute the aid, would be UNRWA. And again, the U.S. has stopped funding that.
Right.
The second thing is that in order to build those piers, they're bringing in trucks with supplies to build the pier, when really they should be just bringing in trucks of food directly.
Right.
The thing is that the reason they can't do that is that Israel has closed off its gates to food aid, and the U.S. is not fighting them on that. They are just letting them do it and continuing to give the Israeli government billions of dollars.
Now, time is definitely of the essence, as we're seeing that not only UNRWA, but other agencies from the United Nations are saying that famine is already taking hold in many areas of, especially the Gaza Strip. How is this going to work out? I mean, what would be, how do you see this situation ending? What is it going to take for there to be peace in rebuilding in the Gaza Strip?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, like this is an urgent situation. Yes, starvation is urgent. And that's why we're taking this uninstructed campaign very seriously. The goal is to vote uninstructed in the April 2nd primary, that's on Tuesday, to actually send an immediate message that we demand policy change right now. We demand a ceasefire right now to stop the bombs that are killing people and also preventing people from even going out when there are aid trucks present to go get the aid. We demand an end to military funding that is actually sending those bombs over. We demand reinstating funding to UNRWA to actually provide the aid that can feed people and start to rebuild Gaza after this horrific devastation and to end the siege that led to these conditions in the first place.
All right.
So people, I think... Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how the situation is going to end, but I think that, to be honest, the only path forward and just the beginning to a path forward.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking with Dalia Asaba. She's with the Listen to Wisconsin campaign. Now, you guys have some other actions leading up to Tuesday's election, right? Can you talk a little bit about other activities people can take part in?
Yeah. So we are really trying to get the word out because I think there are a lot of people who are supportive of this campaign but have not heard about it yet. So we are phone banking on a daily basis. If you are interested in this campaign and getting involved, I encourage you to go to listentowisconsin.com/volunteers, and there are opportunities to sign up to help phone bank. We will also be having a rally in Madison on Library Mall on Saturday morning at 10 a.m. if you'd like to join. This is a rally for Land Day which is, you know, a day of, it's a Palestinian day of commemoration for the land. And we'll also be discussing this uninstructed campaign.
Okay. And of course, if you haven't voted yet and you do want to make a protest vote, you should vote uninstructed. And that would be in the presidential docket, right? Category?
Yes. Okay. In the Democratic presidential primary.
Right. Okay. Dahlia, I want to thank you very much for being on the show this morning, and also wish the best for your family and for all the Palestinian people. Actually, that's, of course, a personal thing here. But thank you very much for being on the show. And again, you said listen to WisconsinCampaign.com. Is that where people can find out more of this again?
Listen to Wisconsin.com, all spelled out.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much, Dahlia Saba, for being on the show.
Thanks, Tony.
Okay. It's 8:31. It's 8:31. And in a minute, we're going to get to Vernal Coleman from ProPublica. It's 8:38. You are tuned into WORT 89.9 FM. And that was Chattanooga Cakewalk from the CD Chattanooga Cakewalk. The name of that CD is actually Loteria de la Cumbia Lounge. So, yeah, hey, we're just having a little difficulty here reaching our next guest. But who knows? Did you get the right number there?
I did. I'm reading it straight from from the email. So I'll give him a call here in a few more minutes, and we'll.
Otherwise, we're going to have to do the backup and get the captain on here and get some weather for y'all.
Yeah,
I'm interested to hear what the weather's like.
It's been cold this week, man. I don't know.
It has been cold this week. It kind of feels like winter.
Yeah.
I hate it. Yeah. We'll play some more music here while we're going to try and reach Vernal Coleman from ProPublica's Midwest Newsroom. That's the plan, anyhow, everybody. It's 8:41, and you are tuned into the Thursday Buzz here on WORT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin. Joining me online, I'm very pleased that we're able to finally connect here, is Vernal Coleman. He's a reporter for ProPublica's Midwest Newsroom. He came out with a recent article which is kind of highlighting one city, Gary, Indiana's attempts to implement some gun regulations regarding the straw purchase of firearms. First of all, Vernal, good morning, and thank you for being on the show, and I'm glad we were able to finally connect.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
All right. Well, that story was pretty compelling. I read the other day, just came out on a couple days ago. Can you tell us, give us a little more background on this 25-year campaign to overturn some gun regulations for the city of Gary, Indiana? Can you tell us about how this all came about?
Well, this started about 25 years ago when the city of Gary sued. Actually, the city of Gary was one of several cities around the country to filed a lawsuit taking aim at, well, the gun industry, including retailers, distributors, and manufacturers over straw sales. And those are sales where essentially buyers will illegally misrepresent themselves and their intentions to gun retailers in order to buy guns for people who, most likely for people who are barred from, by federal law, from buying guns themselves. This is their attempt to try and find a remedy to gun violence that was really so prevalent in the time in places like Detroit, places like New Orleans, and certainly the city of Gary, which at one time, and certainly the late 90s and sometime in the late 80s, was one of the most dangerous cities in America. And over the years, as these cases were filed, the gun industry took aim at these lawsuits and utilized, well, I guess their influence and put pressure on Congress to, you know, find a remedy to these lawsuits. And there were various different laws that were passed sort of aiding the industry and giving them a shield against civil lawsuits. And one by one, for a variety of different reasons, these lawsuits failed. But in the city of Gary's case, was able to proceed despite several attempts by the state legislature to essentially upend the bill after the federal government, or rather the Congress, was able to pass various different pieces of legislation that essentially upended the various other lawsuits. The city of Gary's case was able to proceed by a narrow exception to the law. For the most part, well, not for the most part, but in by and large, I guess, because they had established that these straw sales were happening. In 1999, before the straw, before the lawsuit was filed, they had conducted several police stings at local retailers, showing that the sales that were proceeding on, you know, shaky ground in terms of who the retailers were selling to. People were, the police officers were representing themselves in circumstances that by federal law should have forced the retailers to reject sales, but the sales went forward anyway. Based on that and that evidence, the lawsuit was able to continue. And so over the years, the state legislature took aim several times at the lawsuit, but wasn't successful because of the lawsuit continued to survive by appeal. The state Supreme Court actually approved the lawsuit, or rather proved that it should be able to proceed by this narrow exception in the law. Up until just this year, was heading towards trial, and then the state legislature introduced this new bill and later approved it, that essentially brought it to a halt. Well, mm-hmm. is likely to bring it to a halt.
Right. What was the penalty for someone making a straw purchase? That is, if Eli here bought a gun for me because I can't buy one. I mean, not to make light of it, but what would be the penalty to that purchaser? Would there be any penalty levied on someone making that purchase?
Yeah, it's a good question. It just depends. You know, I get this question a lot, and it's one of the you know, the refrains from the folks who are proponents of gun rights. You know, and that the federal government, or rather the government, should just crack down on these purchasers. Well, that has happened in various different years, mm-hmm. And it always, you know, there's just like anything else in terms of criminal justice, there's ebbs and flows in terms of what the penalties look like. But I mean, just analyzing a lot of these cases, The penalties can range from, say, if, you know, if you were to get Eli to make a one-time purchase, Eli might get only, and you yourself might only get just a few months, maybe even just probation, let's say, for like one gun, one particular gun.
Right.
But.
Oh. There we go. Well, folks, we're going to make another connection in the meantime. Got some more. How about some more music? All right, Vernal, are you there?
Yeah. Sorry about that. I'm not sure what happened, but I think I was saying, yeah, if we were talking about utilize what the penalties might be, but yeah, so for people who are involved in conspiracies that involved sales over time, and I've seen several cases where people have purchased via straw sales dozens of guns mm-hmm. in a relatively short amount of time, the penalty might be a little bit harsher. So maybe upwards of, but maybe like 2 to 3 years. So this isn't, a case where there's terribly harsh penalties in terms of time that might be sentenced to someone. But it's not, it's not nothing.
Right. Now, the penalties mainly went to the retailer, or it was initially, the bill initially 25 years ago was meant to not only go after the retailers, the one who allowed these sales to happen, but also to go after gun manufacturers. And, of course, they didn't like that aspect of it. And like so many other places, including Wisconsin, you only had to wait till there was a Republican majority in both houses of Congress, and of course they elected a Republican attorney general. So the new law that the Republicans passed was that cities cannot set up their own gun regulations. Everything has to go through the state legislature, and more importantly, through the attorney general, right?
Yeah. And Indiana, with this new bill, has joined several other states in terms of creating a regime of preemption that does not allow cities to bring lawsuits like this. Then the bill only allows the state attorney general to bring a case. It does allow their attorney general to bring a case for several reasons, but this particular case was based on the state's nuisance laws in terms of it's able to bring a case for on claims of nuisance or negligence. And this particular AG has signaled pretty clearly that he is not willing to bring a case against the gun industry, member of the gun industry, based on nuisance claims.
Right. Now, of course, Gary, Indiana itself has a big issue with the proliferation of guns right next to Chicago, of course, which... Now, whether or not it's real, but the papers and the media really hypes up the fact that there's so many shootings in Chicago, even though, as I understand, the rate has gone down. But it's just like there's just so many guns everywhere. We know that. I mean, Milwaukee, a lot of urban areas, but even in Madison. And part of the story that you were writing about, the guns that you traced actually ended up in a police shooting here in Wisconsin, actually, that you were tracking from these straw sales. Eli's got a question here.
Yeah, kind of along that lines. I mean, it seems like a lot of the enforcement when these straw sales happen is on, you know, once something goes wrong. It's like the enforcement happens once, you know, like the shooting that Tony alluded to in Delafield, of like once these guns are involved in a more serious crime is kind of when the enforcement goes down. Can you talk a little bit about kind of, you know, that difference between, you know, these individual enforcement versus these, you know, more trafficking enforcements of people bulk buying guns, and then kind of the relation to Operation Hollow Point and these sting operations trying to, I guess, get ahead of this enforcement before a more serious crime occurred?
Well, yeah, it's complicated. Operation Hollow Point did form the basis of the city of Gary's lawsuit, but there, as far as I can tell, there was no criminal.
Darn it. You're getting to the good spot.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to get back to that right away because Eli's on top of it. All right, we're back, and Verno, you're there, right?
Yeah. I think I was saying that. Yeah, the bar for disciplining retailers is very high. Retailers are licensed by the ATF. But in terms of straw sales, the ATF would have to determine that they knowingly participated in a straw sale in order to fine them, or not fine them, but to take any action on their license, which would upend their business if they were to lose it. So the difference, I think, in terms of what retailers are actually able to do, and I'm sorry, one more time, what was the question?
Basically, just kind of like, you know, how is this going to impact the ability to, I guess, you know, enforce these gun laws? I feel like that's often what we hear is like, you know, the laws are on the book. How can they be enforced? Versus on individuals versus institutions is kind of what we're getting at.
Like the gun industry you're talking about, yes.
The gun industry. Gotcha. The scary part about doing this research and doing this story is that the guns that are actually found, the ones that are people that are actually prosecuted, those are just the straw sales that the federal government knows about. That's just what they've been able to, say, determine in based on their backtracking of these sales. And that research really only goes so far. There may be any number of guns that people have purchased that did not occur in a particular district or in a particular area. People can certainly go outside of a particular area and cross state lines and do the same exact thing in terms of conducting straw sales. So in terms of individuals, they're able to, if the ATF gets a tip, they have an informant, et cetera. Sometimes retailers, if they're doing their due diligence and they're good actors, they will be proactive about, liaising with the ATF about suspicious sales, suspicious people. That's not always the case. So ATF law enforcement can actually get ahead of some of this stuff. Well, I shouldn't say that. They can actually backtrack and track down some of these people who are involved in straw sale schemes. But in terms of the actual retailers, it's very, very rare for criminal charge to be levied against a retailer.
Right.
And it's rare, certainly, for ATF to pull someone's license. One of the retailers that we've written about, one that was certainly at the center of the Gary case at one time, was an organization, or rather a retailer named Westport Sports, was sort of out on the outskirts of Gary. And what we found, and certainly what was published over years and years of, I guess, press scrutiny of this issue, was that Westport Sports was one of the, I guess, top sources of guns confiscated by Chicago police in terms of crime and from in police investigations, from traffic stops, and from people who just were barred for whatever reason from from owning a gun or possessing a gun, the guns were traced back there. And just that level of frequency would indicate that there was a problem at Westport Sports. But as far as we could tell, Westport Sports never lost its license, never had its license revoked or suspended or anything like that. Yeah. And there's certainly been other reporting out there that indicates that it's, again, it's very rare for ATF to actually pull the license of a retailer who's involved in who's the site of straw sales.
Right.
Though that has changed. The laws under President Biden have tightened up a little bit, but we'll have to see if that that translates into stricter, I guess, scrutiny of retailers.
All right. Vernal Coleman, he is the ProPublica's Midwest newsroom reporter. His recent article just came out on the Operation Hollow Point, I believe is what it was called. I want to thank you. I wish we had more time, but it looked like the Indiana State Attorney General is listening to your phone and disconnecting you every once in a while. Vernal, thank you very much for being on the show this morning, and this is definitely something that we'll continue to watch. And again, if people want to follow up on that, go to ProPublica's March 27th edition. Thank you, Vernal, for being on the show.
All right.
All right. I want to also thank Dali Asaba from the Listen to Wisconsin campaign. Eli, thank you very much. And thank you all of y'all for listening. Stay tuned for The Real Hajira.
Good show, Tony.
All right. Thank you very much.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Thursday, March 28th.
This is Bird Note. Spring means woodpeckers carving out nest cavities. They're our most familiar bird carpenters. But they aren't the only excavators at work. Tiny nuthatches, which also have chisel-like bills, are exceptional wood carvers. They will chip out nests in wood as tough as utility poles. Some nuthatches coat their nest holes with sticky conifer resin. This may discourage predators or competitors, like squirrels and house wrens, from taking over the nest site. The nuthatches flit above the sap as they come and go. The resin deposited outside red cockaded woodpecker holes is thought to deter predators such as snakes. Very soft tapping may signal a chickadee at work. Even without a chisel for a bill, chickadees can still peck their way into less dense wood, like a knot hole or a decayed section of a trunk. Both males and females ferry out wood chips, creating a cylindrical cavity about 8 inches deep. Finally, the female alone adds a nesting layer of moss, lined with a softer material like fur, to make a soft and warm bed for eggs and nestlings. So listen this spring for bird carpenters and watch for telltale showers of sawdust. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann. Bird Note gives you the sounds of birds every day, and you get the sights as well when you follow us on Instagram at Bird Note Radio.